Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, my guest this evening is Jennifer Farron. Her mission is to connect hearts through message and song. For the past 20 years, Jennifer has been a music minister at some of Atlanta's finest New Thought churches. Being an 8-year member of Unity's National Music Ministry team, she helps organize, assist, and document the growing New Thought and positive music movement. Her most favorite thing in the world is to create positive energy with like-minded people like you. So please help me welcome Jennifer Farron. Jennifer, good evening.
Good evening. How are you, David?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Feeling fantastic. Just finishing up snowpocalypse down here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, well, we're doing that up here, too. How much did you get?
Well, we only got about a quarter of an inch of ice and maybe a few inches of snow. But for us down here, the ice really gets us.
Yeah, I don't envy you for that. Ice is a terrible thing. We got about a foot of snow up here, and it was the wet, heavy stuff, nor'easter stuff. So I had a little bit of snow shoveling to do today.
but the fun thing about being snowed in is that, you know, I got to play a lot, and my husband's a musician as well, so we kind of took turns booting each other out of the studio so that we could each get our studio time downstairs in our basement studio.
Oh, cool, cool. What does your husband do?
He plays guitar. He's a phenomenal guitar player. And then I've got a baby grand down there. So he'd be downstairs playing on his guitar, and I'd come down and say, it's my turn now. And so we kind of tag-team the studio time.
Isn't that neat? Well, happy Valentine's Day to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been awesome so far.
Great. Right. Well, thank you for sharing Valentine's Day with us. I'd like to start off by asking you what your early religious and spiritual experiences were like.
Well, as a child, I spent a lot of weekends with my grandparents, and I'm a native Atlanta Georgian, which is rare. A lot of people move here from all parts of the planet, but I was actually born and raised in Georgia. So my grandparents, one was a Methodist and one was Southern Baptist. And so sometimes we'd go to the Southern Baptist Church, and sometimes we would go to the Methodist Church. And my mom would take me to the Methodist Church. And so basically, we were kind of spotty churchgoers. We didn't go all the time. I'm a product of divorced parents, and so we didn't really have any particular church that we were affiliated the whole time that I was growing up. And so I kind of did a little bit of the Methodist, a little bit of the Baptist, and then my mom was into New Thought for many, many years. And so, you know, whatever books she was reading, as I got older and became a young adult, we would share books and share New Thought books. And eventually, by the time I was about 17, we found Unity churches down here in Atlanta. We started going to Atlanta Unity Church, which is a very open-ended New Thought community that is based on the teachings of Christ but not limited to. And so at that point, my spirituality, I feel, really started to take off, and I really began to identify with who I was as a spiritual being.
Oh, that's wonderful. You were lucky to find that so early in your life. What was your original conception of God like? And how did that
evolve? I remember as a child, I remember being very confused that I had to pray. I didn't know who I was supposed to pray to. You know, I lay in bed at night. And also I was now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Everyone knows that childhood prayer. And so oftentimes when I would get into my bed at night, that's the first thing that would go through my head as I was, you know, getting into my prayer time before I went to sleep. And then I remember just saying, okay, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to pray to God or to Jesus, but whoever may be listening, this is what's on my mind. This is who I would like to pray for. These are the things that I would appreciate in my life. And so, you know, I just remember being a little bit mildly confused on whom it is exactly that I was supposed to be praying to. And I guess I just didn't really have a very clear understanding of how to pray and how to connect with Spirit, especially as a young kid.
Sure. Now, did you think that Jesus was God or part of God? How did you conceptualize that?
Yes, I knew from the beginning, going to the Sunday school classes, and my grandparents were teachers. They weren't, I wouldn't say they were what I would call hardcore-type Christians. You know, we didn't really discuss faith necessarily on purpose. If I had questions, I'm sure they probably answered them. But I did identify Jesus as the Son of God and as the Savior, which is how it was presented, which is what was presented to me when I would go to the Methodist Church or the Southern Baptist Church. I was always very confused about the concept of being called a sinner and a little bewildered at the worthiness issues and stuff like that. I think if I had had New Thought teachings as a young child, now that I'm in New Thought churches primarily, and I see these children blossoming and growing up into empowered, strong, spiritual young adults, my daughter has grown up with, you know, being able to discern and go to different types of religious services with all of her friends. And I remember one time she came home and was just distraught because the youth director at the local Baptist church, she had gone with a neighbor friend, and she had come home distraught. She said, "Mom, they took me into the minister's office and closed the door, and the youth director and the minister were in there, you know, questioning me and accusing me of, you know, have you been saved yet?" And she said, "They scared me. They really freaked me out." And she said,
"Oh my God.
Am I supposed to be saved? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I had a pretty good handle on my spirituality." And she was not a child, but she was middle school age, probably about the fifth or sixth grade. And she was just traumatized by these two adults at this local church that she went to with a neighbor that all of a sudden they were accosting her about being saved and "have you been saved" and blah, blah, blah. And she just was, she never went back there again. She was just scared to death.
I don't blame
her.
I
just never understood that type of spirituality. And I'm sure there are many paths to God, and certain things work for certain people. But, you know, I just remember explaining to her, "Well, Kelsey, you know, they sound to me like they were coming from a basis of fear." And I said, "You know, as I've grown up and in my own spirituality, I've come across circumstances like that where I was a little bit confused going to certain services, and that just didn't work for me." And I said, "Now you've been through this experience. You see that particular method doesn't work for you, and you will start building and structuring your own type of spirituality and build on your belief system and your truth system as you become an adult." And it's sad when kids go through traumatic religious experiences, but I feel like religion and spirituality are two very, very different things. Sometimes.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know, I had a guest on yesterday who was a transgendered man, and as a little girl, he came to his parents and said that he was a boy, and at first they thought he was, you know, just joking around. And then when they found out that he was serious about that, they actually performed exorcisms on him. So he was severely religiously abused, you know, and it's horrible to hear stories like that. Now, can you educate the listeners a little bit about what New Thought is? Because some of them may not know.
Well, here's what my take of New Thought is. I when I quit college back in the late 80s, I came home and I was very disappointed, very disillusioned, feeling very disappointed in myself and in the whole experience that I had been through. And my mom said, don't worry, I have found this incredible church. It's called Atlanta Unity Church. I want you to come with me. And so we went on a Wednesday night, and there was a wonderful minister at the time that became a lifelong teacher and mentor. Carol O'Connell was the minister at Atlanta Unity for the Wednesday night services, and her soon-to-be husband, Don DeCenza, was the music director on those Wednesday night services. And my mom and I began to go. And what Unity started teaching me is the power within myself and the divinity within myself. Unity specifically is based on the teachings of Jesus Christ, and they recognize him as a great and wise spiritual teacher on this planet. And yet many Unity churches that I've been to, because now I'm a traveling musician, and there are lots of different types of Unity churches, just as there are different types of Catholic churches and different types of Baptist churches. But primarily Unity's teachings are based on the teachings of Jesus, and they have the five basic principles. And it's more of an empowering thing to find your spirituality and filter out what works for you. The five basic principles of Unity begin with there's only one presence and one power in the universe, God. And then the principle two is that human beings have within themselves that God or Jesus potential, the Christ potential, actually, are very essences of God, and so that we're inherently good and we're powerful spiritual beings. The third principle is the law of mind action, where thoughts held in mind reproduce after their kind of like the popular book and the popular movie The Secret that Michael Beckwith has been associated with, manifesting what you manifest in your mind is the law of attraction, basically. And then principle four is the power of prayer and learning how to be still and learning how to open your mind and open your thoughts to guidance and direction of spirit through meditation and through prayer. And then the last principle is the principle of action and knowing and understanding the laws of life or our truth, as we are learning it, is not enough. We have to take the truth that we know, and we have to live our lives in that truth that we know. Otherwise, the teachings that you learn are only theory, and they have no power to change your life. So that last action, principle five, is about absolutely moving forward in your truth that you are learning as you are evolving as a spiritual being, as you are learning to grow, and putting that faith into action. And moving forward in your life with the teachings that you are learning. And what I've loved about Unity, many of the ministers that I've heard, and it's like this with CSL churches too, which are Centers for Spiritual Living, is that they present you with myriad types of lessons. They present you with life lessons. It's almost like going to a life skills workshop when you go to these spiritual services, because they're not just quoting Bible scripture at you. They're not just throwing Bible stories at you. They are actually giving you tools to work with, mind action tools to work with, so that you can actually manifest and change your life for the better and live your life to its fullest, and giving you tangible ways to put your thought into action, and that's what I really like. And they're not limited to just the teachings of Jesus. They certainly bring in the wisdoms of Martin Luther King Jr., of Gandhi, Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of religious science or science of mind, which has now come together as Centers for Spiritual Living. A couple of years ago, they came back together again and have been rebranded as Centers for Spiritual Living. But, these new thoughts, philosophies are of the mind that we are all responsible for our own path on this planet. It's not enough just to worship and idolize a figure and let that figure have all of the power to relieve you of all of your sins. Really, in New Thought, sin is simply missing your mark. There's not really a big emphasis on sin. There's not really a big emphasis on any one entity being a savior. It's all about learning from the multiple wisdoms and the multiple paths that lead to God. And so that really attracted me, and that really has helped me write some beautiful music to accompany that soundtrack of life that I am on now. And so these teachings are they're very provocative, and sometimes you understand them, and sometimes you think, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to go to that level. And then you do, and you start practicing these teachings, and you really start getting it, and things start flowing better, and you become... You get into a much clearer space in your life, and you become spiritually awakened and more spiritually mature. And I feel that's what has been happening to me for the past 25, 30 years now. And it's a really great track to be on.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. You really covered a lot of ground there, including the question I was going to ask you about sin. And certainly I like the emphasis on personal responsibility, whether it has to do with our spiritual growth or anything in our life. I think that personal responsibility is such a key concept to employ in our lives.
Yeah.
Without it, we become victims, or we become perpetrators of some sort. And,
well, we become sheep. I remember my first...
Yes.
Message that I wrote was to be sheep or not to be sheep, and it was like, well, you know, there are many different emphases. What is the plural of emphasis? Emphases. There are many different ways to view that statement. Do you want to be a sheep? Do you want to follow blindly? Do you want to just put all your faith and trust in one particular entity and just move blindly through life and let that be the end all be all and not learn anything else and not open yourself to learn anything else? Or do you want to maybe perhaps be the shepherd and be that dominating figure in your own life that, you know, you help yourself become more empowered and you open yourself to multiple teachings, and that leads to tolerance, that leads to acceptance of all beings. You were mentioning the transgendered person that was on your show the other day, you know, being tolerant, and not just being tolerant, but moving past mere tolerance and being loving and accepting and understanding the concept that we are all one. And really, in a nutshell, if I were to really describe in hindsight now, after I said all that other verbiage about New Thought faiths, it really has a strong emphasis on knowing that we are all one. We are all in this together, and it's very important not only just to love ourselves, but to love and accept everyone around us. And that's, you know, it's a very, very important aspect of spirituality, I think. That's probably the crux of the biscuit, as we say down here in the South.
Well, I like that, crux of the biscuit. I'm going to have to remember that. I do believe that we're all one, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to deliver as a message on this show in different ways, because people receive the message in different ways, and that's okay too. Whatever works for a person is fine, but I am trying to point out the fact that we all are different. We're all unique. We have different beliefs, different religions, but ultimately we're all human beings, and the emphasis is on the being part. That's our spirituality. And so in talking with various people of different faiths, we try to find where we can find that common ground, and we can explore our oneness with others. So that's what this show is all about, and thank you for sharing your thoughts about being one. Let's talk a little bit about your music. Now, when did you begin making music, and tell us a little bit about your musical journey?
Well, as a young child, when my parents were still together, we lived in western Kentucky, in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And my dad is a wonderful guitar player. He's also a drummer, percussionist. And his father, the grandparents that we would spend a lot of weekends with growing up, Papa was a music director, and so he played multiple instruments. There was always a piano or an organ in the house. And so as we would grow up with Dad, you know, he had us singing three-part harmonies, my sister and I, and he and my sister and I, you know, all through our childhood up until I was about 5 or 6. And then when my parents split, we moved back down to Atlanta, where my parents, where my mom was originally from. And we kept going to Minnie and Papa's house on the weekend. They had an organ. So I remember sometimes I would just lay on my belly on the floor and just do the bass pedals and just listen to the bass pedals and move, you know, and just move them around and play with the bass pedals on the floor. And then I'd sit up on the – and it was a wonderful two-tiered organ. And I'd sit – when I sat too high up, I was real short, and I couldn't reach down to get the bass pedal. So I'd either have to lay on my belly and do the bass pedals on the floor, or I'd sit up on the bench kind of high and then just start mashing all the buttons and start playing around and discovering the sound. And also my other grandmother had an organ in her house for quite some time too, and so I'd always go – and she lived in the same neighborhood as we did over in Stone Mountain. And so I would go up to Grandma's house often and play her piano. And then finally – when I was, I think, in the 7th grade, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but my grandparents all chipped in with my mom, and they bought me this phenomenal upright piano, the, you know, really nice high upright piano, just had beautiful tone to it, and I just began to write and write and write and play and play and play, and then I could just play to my heart's content all day long. And my sister was older than I was, is older than I am, and so our school schedules were different, so I would always be the first one home, and my mom would be working, and so I would just spend every afternoon coming home from school and just playing, playing, playing. And finally I found someone to... as I got older, as I got into high school, I found someone in the neighborhood that was a songwriter, and I actually began to write real songs, not just playing and jamming vicariously, but actually start structuring and forming my music into songs. And then I met a good friend, Steve Botsford, in high school, and he would come over to the house, and he would listen to my music, and I would always sneak into the clubs because he was always in all the cover bands, and so we'd pretend like we were brother and sister so that I could get into the clubs since I was underage, and they'd go, oh, you look just like Steve. You must be his sister. Come on in. And so I'd go out and listen to the live music, and I was writing the sappy love songs and the real dramatic kind of quasi-classical slash jazz kind of, you know, heartbroken love song type songs and, you know, silly love songs, as Paul McCartney would say. But I started really exploring and playing once I got that my very own piano in my own home. And things started really happening from there. And then I would be in all the pageants and in all of the, you know, Battle of the Band competitions, and everybody else would be up there with their bands and with their, you know, other people that they're jamming with, and nobody wanted a chick in the band. So, you know, nobody wanted a chick singer, and so I would always just get up there and play my own little songs, and I wrote a song for my mom one year in one of the pageants, and it was called Mama, and played that, and so I would, you know, get into all these shows at school just so that I could get up and play piano and play my original music. And then that actually garnered itself into a college scholarship, and I never really could read music very well, but I kind of BS'd my way into a college scholarship up in the Carolinas at Catawba College, and went in with an original piece, and it was very orchestral and had lots of different movements. It had vocal parts and instrumental parts, and all of a sudden I was thrown into a college environment where everyone else knew their theory, everyone else knew how to read music to some degree because most people had been in their school music programs, and I never really was in the school music programs. I always just played by ear, and so all of a sudden I was very out of my element, and music started becoming a real chore to me because I was so far behind the eight ball. I did not know how to read music at that point, and so I didn't really get through my first year of college because it was just too much of a struggle. I just couldn't hang. I was so far behind. There was no possible way to BS your way through stuff that you should have already known, you know, 5 or 10 years of music theory can't be automatically picked up and learned unless you're just an extreme prodigy. And I wasn't that extreme of a prodigy. So I quit college and I joined a band full time. And that is when my real schooling, I think, for music began, is when I began to actually start playing with other people. That's how I met my husband, is in the very first band that I joined, and just learning how to play with other people, learning how to listen to what the other musicians are doing, learning how to fill in and do your thing and be part of a group and not just be the diva, you know, soloist person. And again, you know, learning that life lesson of we are all one, learning how to be one on stage with all these other people that were so much more learned than I was at the time. And many of them still are more learned than I am. but you know, you just kind of, as a young adult, from about 17 to 25 was my real zone of connecting with other people, of having really big ears, and really learning how to blend in, learning how to blend and not stand out and be too out front, you know, especially when you're singing in a jazz vocal group. I found that Unity Church when I first came back from college and was constantly part of a music program at a church from that point on, and eventually became assistant music director of Unity North Atlanta, that minister that I first came across at Atlanta Unity. Carol O'Connell became the lead minister and the founding minister of Unity North Atlanta Church. And her music director was the man from those Wednesday night services who became her husband, Don DeCenza. And so in those 15 years or so of associating with Unity North Atlanta, I learned an awful lot from Donnie D, Don DeCenza, and his playing and his leadership and his technical and jazz prowess. And, you know, vocally, I learned how to really expand and how to blend and how to hear harmonies. And I did learn how to read much quicker in the more comfortable, relaxed spiritual environment of colleagues around me. And they were patient and they helped me and they taught me. And that's how I really began to learn.
Mm. Well, tell me, how do you go about writing a song? Do you start with the title, or do you start with the music and then add the lyrics?
Well, being a staff member at church, either as an assistant music director or as music director, music minister, many of the songs that I have written in my adult life have been a direct result of whatever the talk title was going to be for that given Sunday. I remember my minister, Sydney McGill Lindquist from Unity Gainesville, Georgia, would often, she's a musician as well, she's a cellist and a great music fan, and was always so supportive and so wonderfully easy to work with. And she would give me her talk titles, you know, weeks in advance, and I'd just be able to, okay, that's the message this week is going to be surrender. And I'm like, okay, I don't have a song for that one yet. Let me work on that. And so it was actually a wonderful thing, because as a writer, I actually had someone who was pointing me and cueing me, saying, okay, write something about this. Okay, now write something about this. And so there was guidance and direction, and there was more of a focused energy and a time frame with which I had to have songs written, because if I didn't have it written by Monday, it certainly had to be written and ready to perform by the following Sunday. So I had about 6 days to write things. And as a result, a lot of songs came very effortlessly. And I always had a piano or a keyboard here at the house. And, you know, so whatever topic, if the topic was change, I would come up with songs about change if I didn't already have anything about change. And, you know, being in a New Thought church, so much of the verbiage of contemporary Christian music is not necessarily appropriate for New Thought churches, because we are not just Christ-based.
Right.
Many of these churches are so much more, and so they're not emphasized. And even if they are based on the teachings of Christ, they're not necessarily Jesus, Jesus, Jesus 24/7. And so you, as a writer, you have to be very open to write in such a way that it is acceptable for any ears to hear. Not just for Christian communities, not just for Jewish communities, not just for Muslim communities, not just for Hindu. I mean, you have to really almost be a little bit learned in many of the different types of faiths, and you start learning the similarities. I love to see all the different little Ten Commandments, not the Ten Commandments, but the, you know, each faith has their little you know, 5 or 10 point thing that kind of sums up their faith. And it's actually fascinating to see how similar they all really are, all the different points that are very similar in the multi-faith community. But so, you know, when I write a song, basically I'll just sit and I'll think about the key word that I'm writing about, the topic that I'm writing about. And for me, and I'm sure everyone's different, but it just all comes at all of a sudden. I'll start hearing the words with the melody. I'll start hashing it out on the piano some. And then the beautiful thing is when I invite other players to play along with me on my CD project, you know, I am somewhat limited on what I can do on the piano, because for many years I was simply a front person standing up and singing in a cover band all of my adult life, and I had a full band playing behind me. So I was kind of a closet piano player. I didn't really play on stage playing piano. It was, you know, that was just something I did on the side at home. It was not what I did professionally.
Well, you sure do now.
But now I really do. That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have become stronger and more confident. And now, especially now that I'm not a music director at a specific church, now I'm what I would call an adjunct type of, they had a special on TV the other night about adjunct professors that are in all these universities now, and people aren't necessarily hiring the full-time tenured people anymore for the colleges and the universities. They're getting adjunct professors to come in that will work for a little bit less money. And so basically that's what I'm doing. I am a guest keynote and traveling. I'm not going to say a minister because I don't have ministerial credentials at this point, but I call myself a guest keynote concert presenter. And so I present a message and support it with music all through the message. And so I sometimes don't do all of a particular song, but I'll speak on a point, and then I'll provide a little bit of music to back that up, and then I'll speak on the next point, provide a little bit of music to sum that up and to present that out and through music. And so that's basically what I do now. So my songwriting is really, it just comes to me. And I'm in the car a lot now, and I don't really listen to mainstream radio. Now I have so many other colleagues and friends that are such phenomenal positive music artists that I listen to either their stuff, or I just have voice memo on my iPhone and I'll just, you know, cruise down the highway and come up with different ideas on the top of my head. And many of them never make it to the piano and they never make it into an actual song, but I'm just constantly creating. I'm in that mode now, and so it just comes to me. Things come to me easily, and I'm always, you know, working on my prayerfulness and my mindfulness of, okay, Spirit, I'm open. I'm open to be a vessel and a channel. Work through me and help me to be an instrument to be a message of love and peace to the world. And that is running through my mind, through my thoughts constantly now. And as a result, things just come very clearly and they come very quickly. And so I've only just started co-writing with people, and that's a whole different ball of wax. Because for me, writing has come so easy as far as just everything coming at once, words and music, that now, you know, working with another co-writer or two or three, it's very interesting, and it's a very cool learning experience to learn how to bounce things off of each other and how to you know, egg each other on and stimulate each other and say, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Oh, how about this? How about this? And it's just becoming more and more fun, more and more creative as I go along. And it's a great life.
Well, you sound so enthusiastic, and it sounds like you've really found your calling in life. You're really blessed. Let's share one of your blessings with our listeners and play one of your songs. And just a note to my producer, we're going to reverse things here. Jennifer's been speaking about Spirit, so let's hear The Light of Spirit. And this is a song by Jennifer Farron, an original composition, with her performing The Light of Spirit.
The light of spirit is me. Now,
The Light of Spirit by Jennifer Farron, who is with us tonight. So, Jennifer, welcome back, and thank you for sharing your music with us. That is from her CD, Inside Job. And let's talk a little bit about your CDs, Jennifer. Where are they available for purchase?
Right now, they are about to be available on iTunes. I have a lot of local friends here in Atlanta that are teaching me and showing me how to get stuff through Reverb Nation onto iTunes. I actually have a new website designer out of Indiana that I'm going up there in April, and she's going to work with me to get everything online. I had a website built about a year and a half ago, but never got a shopping cart, never got all of the product actually on my site. So at this point, you can go to my website, jenniferfarron.com, and you can email me from there and request CDs. You can also just email me at jfarronsings@aol.com and can order them. And also you can come out and support my live shows. And I will be coming to a spiritual center near you, no matter where you are. I'm going to be actually in Syracuse at the end of the month of March. I'll be down in Florida for a couple of weeks. I go all up and down the East Coast. Since I'm out of Atlanta, I kind of stay in the East Coast zone right now. But I am looking to work my way out towards the West and hopefully get out to San Diego. I've been out to Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm hoping to go down to South Texas, to Houston, and those parts in this next year. This is really, 2013 was the first year that I really started traveling and taking my music on the road. And so it's always awesome for new people to hear me, and they immediately want the music. And I've actually had to get my CDs reburned or, you know, get new orders put in a couple of times this year because I've run out. And, you know, it's so interesting how we can sell ourselves short sometimes, and we say, well, I don't need to print out 1,000 CDs. I'll never sell that many. Well, all of a sudden, you're not selling that many, and you really wish that you had put in that order for 1,000 CDs. But so primarily right now, people are just buying them live when I do shows and concerts. But very, very soon they will be on iTunes, and you'll just be able to go on regular iTunes and type in Jennifer Farron, and the music and the CDs will pop up. And that is happening in the very foreseeable future, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. What are the names of your CDs? Of course, there's Inside Job, and the two
there's
cuts that we're
Job
playing tonight both come from that.
Then we have Body, Mind, and Spirit, which was done around 2008. And then we have My Resolutions, which was my very first real studio CD back in 1996. That first came out, and that was before I really realized that I was all New Thought positive music. And so it has a little bit of smattering of love songs and other types of songs on there, and different, all different. That CD just runs the range of country to pop to jazz to soul and to straight out gospel. So that was before I really started. That's as I was discovering who I was, and I have grown since then. I have a couple of CDs, Thank You Spirit and Bless My Soul, and Instruments of Peace that I did in my home studio, but I don't really sell those anymore because compared to the other CDs that have been produced in, like, real studios, not just my home studio, with, you know, really awesome engineers and with other incredible instrumentalists and musicians that came on board to really take the songs to the next level, it's like those first few that I did in the home studio don't really stack up and compare quality-wise. The songs are all really awesome, I think. But I was listening to them. I found some in a drawer the other night. I'm like, you know, I really need to go back into the studio and do these songs for real because they are really great songs. They still stand after all these years. But I just, you know, your songs are like your babies. And sometimes you have, for me, I have so many songs, and they're only, you know, 12 to 14 can get on any given CD. And as an independent artist, you know, sometimes there is not that readily available money where you can just go straight in anytime you want. I mean, you have to save and you have to budget, and we have a child in college right now. And so, you know, sometimes the money gets put to other uses too, but I'm starting to get to that point where I will start being able to produce CDs annually like many of my other colleagues do. Because that's the thing, you know, you go to these places and people they buy your CDs and they support your music, and you're back there again in 6 months, well, they've already bought your CDs. So you constantly, as a traveling artist, it's very important to stay on top of that and to be in the studio and to always be in that process of recording so that even if you don't have a full 12 to 14 song CD, you have like an EP with at least four or five songs on there that can be purchased. But the wonderful thing about iTunes, and I think eventually artists will probably stop running and producing actual physical discs, because compact discs within the next 2 or 3 years will probably become a thing of the past, just like vinyl, just like cassette tape, just like 8-tracks, you know, and just like 88 records back in the day when it all first started. You know, eventually it'll just all go to straight digital download, and there won't even be a need to spend the money on the replication because it'll all be available online. You know, you'll do your songs, you'll produce them, and then people can just go online and download them for 99 cents or $1.29 or whatever. And as an artist, you know, I think eventually we won't have to have that extra cost of actually having physical product. You know, people can just go online and purchase it. But you never know. I mean, vinyl's making a comeback, too. I mean, people are still buying vinyl. The turntables are turning up in the stores nowadays, thanks to the DJ craze and all that. So you are able, and we have tons of vinyl in my house. I'm in my back bedroom right now where our album collection is, and we just have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vinyl records. It's pretty cool. So maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I sit corrected. Maybe CDs will, you know, still keep going for at least a while, but who knows what the next format's going to be. But
I would miss them.
I know.
I have so many of them. I went out and got myself a new CD player so that I was able to have something to play them on.
Well, you know, and all of my stuff is now on iTunes. I mean, not my personal stuff, but all of my music that I listen to is on my iTunes program on my Mac or on my iPhone. And anybody with a smartphone now, you know, you've got your songs on a library on your phone now. And I have a Ford Escape, that has a sync program on it that syncs everything up, and you can listen to your stuff through your phone now. You know, you don't even have to have it physically connected to the car. It can read it via Bluetooth, and so I don't have to stick CDs in and out while I'm driving. I just click on the flip on my steering wheel and say, play Greg Tamblyn, play Faith Rivera, play Karen Drucker, and the music just instantly comes up and starts playing from my iPhone. So, you know, that's why I'm saying it, you know, as an artist, it is important to have product to sell because that is one of our main sources of income. And yet, you know, there are some, I mean, even Richard McBeefy and Sue are starting to put things, put all their music on flash drives and just say, for $50, here's a flash drive of all of my stuff. And, you know, that way people can upload it onto their computer. It's in iCloud, and you can just access it wherever you are via your phone and just a pair of earbuds or a good pair of headphones. So who knows what the future holds as far as formats go. But I'm definitely looking forward this year to getting back into the studio. I have such a backlog of songs, and it's going to be, you know, playing favorites. And not only do I have a ton of new music, but like I said a little bit ago, listening recently to some of my older CDs that I first put out that I did in my home studio, there's some great songs on there that deserve full production and deserve to have, you know, really awesome musicians bringing them to life and bringing them to that next level. And so, you know, there's definitely no shortage of creativity in music that is going to be recorded in the next, you know, in the very near future. So I'm very blessed in that capacity. There is an abundance of creativity and an abundance of songs in my library. So I'm very, very blessed and constantly inspired. You know, I'm inspired by my family. I'm inspired by the people that I meet along the way. I'm inspired by life circumstances that I see, situations around the world that are broadcast. And, you know, as an artist, as a composer, you gain your information and your inspiration from many, many sources, and then you filter it through your thought system and your spiritual system. And then sometimes when you're even more fortunate, you co-write with other people. I was fortunate to write with Janice Stanfield and Freebo a couple of years ago, and I also wrote with Terry Wilder and Faith Rivera and with Sue Riley and Sloan Wainwright and Penny Nichols. So, you know, there are just so many great artists out there, and we're all writing this music called positive music, and it's just basically music that is nourishment for the heart and the soul. It's music that is about life and about people and about relationships and about life situations. And it's everyone's different take, and there's everything from R&B to pop, country, to jazz, to spoken word. There's a gal, Kim Ballou, out of Ohio, incredible rapper. Her stage name is True, and she's just phenomenal, does phenomenal positive music rap. And then there's the old school guys like Leroy White that's been around forever, and he worked with the Youth of Unity at the youth rallies for many, many years, just doing his own brand of funk and soul. And, you know, there are just so many different types of artists out there, and there are people that are just that just do instrumental music. There are people that are just vocalists. There are people that are a little bit of everything, and so it's just a really cool tribe of people. We have a great music conference every year down in Florida called the Posse Music Fest, and so if you Google Posse Music Fest Florida, you'll see where it's going to be next year. I'm not sure of the exact location, but I know it's going to be Tampa, St. Pete area. We've been having it in Orlando for the past few years, and now we're moving over to Tampa, St. Pete area to be a little bit closer to the water.
Now, is that open to?
Oh, yeah, it's open to
everybody. Is that open to people to come? Really?
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. It's not just for artists. It's not just for musicians. It's for fans. You know, some churches, some spiritual centers like Sebring Unity down in Florida, they bring like, you know, 30 or 40 people with them. You know, they pack up a bus and they rent a bus and they just all come together. And, you know, lots and lots of spiritual communities bring just a whole posse of people with them. And it's growing every year. It's growing. And it's such a great age range and diversity of people there. And like I said, all the different styles of music, well, there's all those different styles of people. You know, you have the 80 to 90-year-old crowd. You got the 40 to 70-year-old crowd. You got the young adults. You've got teenagers now that are coming with their parents. sometimes begrudgingly, like, I don't want to go to this dorky positive music fest. And then they go. And then the kids are the first ones to get up at song sharing. We have song circles that happen a couple of nights. And some of the young kids are the first ones that will step up. And we have, like, small song circles with, like, 20 people each, where everybody sits in a circle and you each go around and you each stand up and do a song. And you either play guitar or you just sing it a cappella, or if you have a track with you, you use your iPhone and just sing along with your iPhone. But it's just a really empowering thing. It's hosted by Empower Music and Arts, which is headed up by Sue Riley and Richard McDeachy out of, they're East Coast. Sue is out of Florida. Richard's now over in Virginia area. But just a phenomenal gathering of artists from all over the planet, and a phenomenal age range of people, a diverse group of people, and you know, just really, really a fun hang. We have what's called a pajama jam on Friday night, where some of us host a room, and so we just move all of the furniture out of the way in our hotel rooms, and mine is called the Free Flight Luau room, and I have like four or five other artists that are in there with me, and we just kind of do it MTV Unplugged style. I've got a keyboard that's got a built-in speaker, and then I've also got little teeny speakers because it's a hotel, so you can't jam out in your hotel rooms. And it's just small little game. People go up and down the hall that night after the main concert that night. Everybody goes and changes into their pajamas and their big duck, you know, fluffy slippers and their big bathrobes and stuff, and they just go up and down the hallway and peek into each room that's a host room.
How fun.
And the doors are all decorated so you can tell which room, and there's a list of who's playing in each room. And that's just a very casual environment where people just stroll up and down the hallway and they pop their head in and they stay for a song or two, and then they go down to the next room. And we all have beverages and snacks and stuff in our room where people can come in, and we host it. And we are artists, and some of the hosts are artists, and some of them are fans that host. Some churches host. And so it's just yet another way for people to come in and hear the music on a more intimate level and a very casual, fun kind of vibe. And then there are workshops all day long that are empowering workshops that all about music. David Roth comes, and he does a great workshop. He does great songwriting workshops, but he also does this thing. It's an organization out of, I believe the guy is out of New York City. It's called Songs of Love. And so every conference, David will bring a profile of a small child with a health challenge that is an impending, you know, very serious health challenge, and he'll have a profile on that child, all of their favorite foods and their favorite people in their family and their friends and the names of their pets. And he'll get a room full of people, and in two or three days, he'll write an entire song, especially for this child. And the child gets that song recorded, and all of these people at the conference have helped co-write that song. And those are the kinds of, you know, community, you know, group-oriented things where you don't have to necessarily be a musician to throw out a line. Well, how about if you talk about her puppy in this line? Or how about if you talk about riding a horse in that line? And, you know, everybody contributes. And it's just a really cool experience to see people from so many cultural backgrounds and so many different ages come together and just really accept each other and love each other and just really have a blast with music for 3 days. There's also a songwriting camp that happens right before that with and you can write with Jana or with Prebo, with Karen Drucker, with Harold Payne and Faith Rivera out of L.A. Daniel Namad is out of L.A. now. And, you know, so many great, great artists that come, and you can sign up. And Greg Tamblyn is sometimes there. You know, artists kind of come and go. Karen Taylor Good and Stowe Daily Shockey are there. And just lots and lots of great artists that you can sign up with to learn how to write songs. And they kind of help you and coax you into writing a song. And it's called Songwriting Camp, and that happens for 2 days before the actual POSI conference starts. And that's kind of an additional thing that you can do. And it's just the coolest hang on the planet Earth. And it's not that expensive. It's always at a great hotel that's moderately priced, and it's just – and there are concerts. There are keynote concerts every night, and it's kind of like the Grammy Awards for positive music. So it all leads up to the Sunday night event, which is the POSI Award Ceremony, and there are three nominees for each category. There are various different categories. There's a social action category, I can't remember all the different categories off the top of my head now. But
well, let me jump in here for a minute, Jennifer.
Every night.
Yeah, I want to have a chance to play another song before we end the program. We're coming close to the end of the hour, so I would really like to play your song, Throw It All Away. That song just really moves
me
every time I hear it. I
love it.
That's
a good one for the beginning of the year, yeah.
Here we go, Throw It All Away.
Awesome, thanks. Yes. Yes.
Oh, that was the wrong song. Yeah.
Well,
that's
just throw it away. Oh, okay. So we don't have that song. Okay.
We don't have it. Oh, my.
Oh, no. Sorry about that.
Okay, well,
I don't see it in the queue here.
That's a shame. Okay.
Do you
have Jennifer?
Do you have any? Do you have any other songs?
Well, I had Throw It All Away, and I don't know what happened to it. I've got it here on my computer, but I think what we're going to have to do, Jennifer, is have you back again, and have a couple of your other songs ready, including Throw It All Away. So I do apologize for that. I'm disappointed because that's my favorite song. But just briefly, before you go, Jennifer, what's your vision for yourself and what's your vision for the world?
My vision for myself is to continue on my path of sharing music and message with people. I think in the next, throughout this year, I am definitely going to be seeking out more community service type situations where perhaps I can get into not prison ministry, I don't want to call it that, but playing for detention centers for youth, for prisons, for drug rehabilitation centers, going into those types of communities that so desperately need a positive message that's not necessarily a religious message, but just a positive life message, and try to really get more into that aspect of teaching and learning and growing with people that really, really need to have some kind of a positive focus and really need to shift their lives. It's one thing to go into spiritual centers and spiritual communities where people are already on that path, and I think it would be very powerful to go into situations where people may not even realize that there's music like this out there that is just good, feel-good, life lesson music that can help you, you know, focus your energies and maintain a more positive track on your life. And so I really want to get more into those types of community situations and also just to continue to hone my craft and hone my music and hone my message and to get more out into the general public and, you know, still stay in spiritual centers but get more out into the greater community as well.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. We've run out of time, and I'm so glad that you are with us tonight. Thank you so much.
It went so fast.
And
how did it go so fast?
I know. It's terrible. But I would love to have you back again, if you'd be willing to.
Oh, I would love to. And thank you so much for this program. I know that it does a great service to the world to have programs like this where people can tune into. So thank you for your gift and for sharing your gifts with the world, too.
It's a blessing. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
Yeah. You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.